Good morning, everybody. Actually, good evening for most of you, I hope. This evening, we will be learning about the fifth installment in our series on substance abuse and use and Judaism, particularly focusing in on drinking on Purim. So we've already discussed a little bit about the general views of alcohol that are expressed as seen through Chazal and the Gemara. But now we're going to focus in because, you know, a week from now, I hope people will be starting to celebrate Purim. So the question is, what are we supposed to do about drinking on Purim? Who, what, when, where, why, and how? So first, I want to give you the drinks list for this evening. So as people may have guessed, it's going to be focusing on wine and wine's W's. By that, I mean who should be drinking, what somebody should be drinking, when you should be drinking it, where you should be drinking it, why you drink it, as well as how much should you be drinking. So now that we have some idea about where we'll be going, so first let's start with the main question. So why do we drink on Purim? So this is, so let's go with a, you know, let's hope it opens the floor. What is in, I'm sure you know you've heard before that you're supposed to drink on Purim, but like what was the reasoning that you've heard? Any guesses?
At lo yada.
Well, that's how much, but why? Right? We don't, as in, it's great to know that we're supposed to be drinking, but why are we drinking on Purim? So the answer to that, so as in, let's take a look first at the original decree, right? So the original decree is actually found in Megillat Esther itself, right? That we are supposed to be drinking year after year. We're supposed to drink because that's what at the time of the miracle they drank. But there's a lot of other things that happened at the time of the miracle that we don't do. So why did the Yemei Mishteh, the days of drinking, or the days of celebration, why did that become such an integral part? So if you take a look at the Gemara, so the Gemara in Megillah discusses the requirement to drink, as was mentioned by Rav Tzinyaris, right, to the mitzvah to drink. So the Gemara there, so Rav is quoted as saying, Chayev Inish Levesume B'Paraya Ad Lo Yada Ben Or Haman Levarach Mordechai. Persons are obligated to become intoxicated on Purim until he is intoxicated so that he does not know how to distinguish between the cursed Haman and the blessed Mordechai. But as far as how exactly to get intoxicated, so Rav Steinsaltz here inserted the word with wine, but that word is not simply his own word. It is a word that he got from Rashi. Right? Rashi, as well as many other Rishonim, stipulate that you're supposed to be drinking and getting drunk with wine specifically. So now that we have some idea that there's mitzvah to drink and wine specifically, the question then comes down to, right, it's not just a day of drinking of anything, but a day of drinking of wine. So what particularly about wine? So to this, so again, as many people have probably intuited by after having read through the Megillah, or if you may have heard the, you know, noticed the fact that the term Mishteh is roughly 20 times in the Megillah, and the word Yayin is there, but is there six times in the Megillah. So here's one of the answers. This is given by Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan, better known as the Chafetz Chaim or the Mishneh Brura, in his commentary, the Bir Halacha on the Siman about the Suda of Purim, what to do at the meal of Purim itself. So the question is going to come up, as hopefully is in everybody's heads right now, that we learned and we know that in general, if we were to take a look at the Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim, that it's prohibited to get drunk, and that actually leads to a lot of bad things. You fully get intoxicated until you don't know what's going on. So how on earth could we have an obligation to get drunk? So the relatively obvious answer, which is here quoted by the name of Eli Rabba, it's also seen mentioned in the Budraham and elsewhere as well, that one could say that this is because all the miracles done to Israel in the days of Achashverosh were by a feast. Initially, Vashti was disturbed by a feast, meaning that's when she got kicked out. And that's how Esther became queen, and it was celebrated by means of a feast, right? A Mishteh. And similarly, the way that Esther did in Haman was by means of another feast, another mishteh, and more drinking. So since Haman was defeated by a feast, the sage is obligated, and everything else, the sage is obligated getting drunk so that he remembers the great miracle of drinking the wine. And also, he makes sure to not to forget to say that in any event, this is for the mitzvah, and it is not a requirement. Right? So as opposed to, let's say, the requirement of the requirement of drinking, it's not as required as, let's say, lading or giving a shalach manot or giving gifts to the poor is, but it's still, part of the mitzvah, but we'll have to look more into what that means, right? So again, we're supposed to have wine because the miracles was wine, right? And that's also why we had vast majority of the posts can say specifically the mitzvah is with wine, specifically wine, because the miracle happened with wine. So the question is going to comes up. Well, okay, but are we really sure that there's even a mitzvah to drink at all, right? Like, how do we know that we saw that the statement of Rava before, but there's a story immediately following it in the Gemara that might change our minds a little bit. So the story is, I'm sure, familiar to many, but it's always good to take a closer look because the way that you interpret the story will determine the halacha as well. So immediately we have the story about with the Rava statement. Now here is a story involving Rava and Rebbe. Some of your side happens to be Rava, but so Rava and Rebbe Zera were preparing a Purim feast together and they became drunk. Yibsum. And then Kam Rava Shachte L'Rebbe Zera. Then Rava got up and Shechted. He slaughtered Rebbe Zera. The next day, right? When he became sober and realized what he had done, Rabbah asked God for mercy and revised the slaughtered Rebbe Zera. And then the next year, Rabbah said to Rebbe Zera, let the master come and let us prepare the Purim feast with each other. And Rebbe Zera said, miracles do not happen each and every hour. I do not want to experience this once again. So does this story seem to be a glowing recommendation for drinking, or maybe something else? Right? So we said you have to be so drunk that you can't differentiate between blessing Mordechai and cursing Haman. But the story that the Gemara gives immediately following indicates that that is far from being the case. So the question is, so what do we make of that? So there's a whole range of opinions amongst the various Rishonim, right? Amongst the various scholars of the ages of how this story plays into the halacha. So we're going to go from least. So I'll hopefully display a little bit of range, and we'll take a closer look. So first, let's start off with one of the earliest opinions, that of Rabbeinu Ephraim, right from the time of the Gaonim. So he explains that what do you learn out from the incident of Rabbah slaughtering Rebbe Zera? It means that we have pushed away the statement of Rabbah and Rava, and the halakha is not like him, and it is improper to do that. Right? V'leid halakotak vate. The fact that the story immediately afterwards says that somebody died and was miraculously revived isn't saying that drinking is good. It's saying drinking is bad. So even though you might think, oh, you're supposed to, the halakha is you're supposed to drink. So Rabbeinu Ephraim says, nah, right? You're not supposed to drink on Purim, right? Or at the very least, not get drunk like the way that Adelo Yada. So then also we have that of Rabbi Menachem Meiri. So this is from the 13th century in France, another one of the Rishonim. So he said that a person must increase happiness on this day of Purim through eating and drinking until there is nothing missing. And in any event, we are not commanded to get drunk and degrade ourselves because of the happiness, because we aren't commanded to have meaningless and vapid joy, but rather happiness and enjoyment that arise from love of God and thanks for miracles that God did for us. And see more what he has said on that Gemara. So here we see, right, Rabbi Nachum Meiri, based on the Gemara we saw before, that clearly when it says getting drunk, you should not be doing anything remotely similar in any way, shape, or form at all to what occurred in the story of the Gemara in Megillah of Rabba slaughtering Rabbi Zeira. So instead, right, you're supposed to stop if you're going to end up being any violence in the case of your drinking, then you should not do so, because the goal is to be drinking in a way that is that gladdens, not and recognizing the miracles, not simply for the sake of getting smashed. So far, it seems like, you know, there's absolutely no way to have any fun on Purim, because, or at least not to get drunk, because seemingly that is definitely the wrong thing to do. Very much, you know, mellowed out by Rabbeinu Ephraim and by the Meiri, or Menachem Meiri. So, and similarly, we have in the 18th century, we have the Chai Adam, Avram Danzig, right, from Vilna, stating that since all the explaining before, as we mentioned earlier, about the reasoning behind drinking is based on the fact that the miracle will happen through wine. So this is only if you're doing so in order to remember the great miracle. But a person knows themselves that they will degrade themselves, and then in that state, that from any mitzvah amongst mitzvot, to Til Yadayim, or saying brachot, grace after meals, or he won't daven mincha or mariv, or you'll behave with rosh, frivolity, it is better not to get drunk, so that all of your actions will be for the sake of heaven. Right, so here, right, we've got the Chai Adam stating that quite clearly, that you should that drinking is limited to the fact where it is a source of joy, not where it leads to your violating any other mitzvot or any other halachot, be they big or small. So again, this is obviously on the dry side of the spectrum, right? This is saying there is a mitzvah to drink wine, but it is definitely not a mitzvah to be getting drunk, right? Because a little bit of wine will make you happy. A lot of wine will make you drunk. You should definitely not be drunk. So far it looks like, you know, that's that. Don't worry, we'll get back to the full other range of opinions for other options besides this. Just this is in terms of the tempering the simple understanding of the Gemara in one opposite extreme. So there's also important, before we continue the discussion, is discussing when you're doing this drinking, right? So when are you drinking? So the Gemara continues in Megillah. So again, in the name of Rava, that if you had decided to drink to have your Purim Seuda at night, right? A Purim feast that one ate at night, the Nothal's obligation. As it says, Yemei Mishteva Simcha, days of feasting and gladness, days and not nights. All right, and then the Gemara there has a story about how, you know, he was wondering why, he was supposed to have a chavruta on Motzei Shabbat, on Motzei Purim, but nobody showed up. And he was trying to figure out why nobody showed up. And then he realized, oh, right, because they all had to get drunk during the day. And therefore, there was no other option besides, you know, and that's why Motzei Purim is not a night to have a chavruta, because odds are your chavruta probably had quite a bit to drink and not necessarily sufficiently with it to actually be learning that night, and that is understandably so. But again, want to point out again, it is quite clear from the Gemara that there is absolutely no obligation to drink alcohol on the night of Purim. Right, it is specifically during the Sudat Purim, which is specifically meant to be done on Purim Day. So let's go back to the question from before, right? So how much should one be drinking? So we mentioned there's certain, you know, limitations in terms of if somebody ends up getting violent, or somebody ends up being in violation of mitzvot. But how much does that end up being at the end of the day? So right, so now we're jumping forward to modern day to some more modern day post games. So now let's take a look at the Shulchan Aruch. Sorry, Rambam first. The Rambam, before Shulchan Aruch, Rambam has the interesting idea that you should drink until you become intoxicated and falls asleep in intoxication. So that seemingly would be, you know, it's not what it says in the Gemara. And the question is, so what exactly does that mean? So to understand what that means, so let's take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, where we'll see some more opinions that will hopefully may put Rambam's option a little more in context. So first off, we have that of the Shulchan Aruch of Yosef Cairo, who says quite simply, one is obligated to be intoxicated on Purim to the point where he does not know the difference between a curse as Haman and blessed Mordechai, meaning the difference between, you know, right, ad lo yada, right? Basically, he's quoting the Gemara straight, the end. So that is the Beit Yosef. But then we have the Ramah. The Ramah quotes a whole range of opinions, some of which we've seen already. First, he quotes that of the Kolbo, which in the same vein as other ones people have been quoting, that it is not necessary to become drunk so much. Rather, you drink more than one is used to. Yoter milimudo. Okay, so then what does that happen? And then the Yishan, right? So one option is that at the Kolbo, you drink a little bit more than normal. If you normally would drink, you know, a glass of wine with dinner, and now it's a glass and a half. And if you didn't normally drink wine with dinner, okay, so you'll have your glass. That'll be that. And then you're supposed to fall asleep, which is the opinion of the Rambam. And the question of how that helps us. So the answer is that and then once, according to Maharil, so once one is in the state of falling asleep, you will not know the difference between Baruch, Mordechai, and Arur Haman, because when you are asleep, you're not intellectually there, right? You were asleep, you are not conscious, and therefore you are definitely unable to distinguish between the two of them. So now you see there's a whole huge range of how much to drink, right? So again, a little bit more than one is used to, enough till it gets you sleepy and tired, or to the part where then take a quick nap. So, or on the other hand, we have the Shulchan Aruch says, as it sounds, until the point of Olo Yada, until you're so drunk you cannot differentiate between cursing Mordechai, cursing Haman, and blessing Mordechai. But very important to note here is that even when you say Adlo Yada, that we are not referring to any state of bodily harm to yourself or to others, right? As it always will happen invariably on Purim, there will be somebody who ends up needing to get their stomach pumped in every community, and that is definitely not right, is not the desired outcome. But as far within the acceptable range of drinking, whether it ranges from having a glass of wine all the way till the point of Adlo Yada. So the Ramah adds that Ve'achad Marbeh Ve'achad Mamit Ubilvad Shechavein Libo Lashamayim. There is no difference between one who has more or one has less, as long as his heart is directed to heaven. Right? So again, the main point being is that, again, these are all acceptable options. And which one you choose from, the point is you have to make sure that you're doing it for the right reasons. But it's also, there are other factors that might play into effect, which we'll also end up discussing as we go on. But now there's also the question of who exactly, we said you should drink Adlo Yada, but who is included in that drinking? So, unfortunately, I apologize, this sounds a little bit misogynistic, but the default always is that you're referring to men. So, but what about women in this case? One would think, Af Hein Hayu B'Tohanes. Women are an essential part of the miracle of Purim. Of course they're required. The answer is, some say yes, many others say no, such as Rav Shmuel Levi Vosner, who says, was asked, can women get drunk? And he says that in my opinion, there's no question that it is not relevant to women. And even if you say that it applies nowadays, based on the psukim that we saw in Megillah earlier, that's for everybody. But because the sages were exacting in the Gemara Ketubot from having wine, because the urges that will incite, and it's also mentioned in Shulchan Aruch as well. So even if her husband is with her, there's no way to know when, right, of a lote da, which he does not know. And such as you can look at the Meiri there, talking about whether that wine or not is good or not for women. And these things are obvious. So what is going on here? So oftentimes what happens is when people are getting drunk at lote da, there's an unfortunate reality of women getting taken advantage of or acting inappropriately. Which, again, there's also the issue of men doing it as well. So it's not really one-sided coin. But as far as there are a significant number of post-kim who say that women do not have the requirement of getting drunk ad de lo yada. Drinking a glass of wine, yes, but getting to ad lo yada. There are many post-kim who, for men, do say you should be doing ad lo yada, but they would not say the same for women.
They have to do mishloach manot.
Yes, have to do this. Every other mitzvah is the same, but not wine on Purim. Yeah, there are those who say that women should, but there are those who say not because of these reasons. The people in this camp also include Rabbi Elazar Melamed, and I can find a good new comprehensive list if you're interested. Also, Modi Mahalakha, Rav Sternbruch, who we'll see in a little bit, also is of the same opinion.
Can I say it's to protect women, or do you think women would do things inappropriate?
My wife saying, asked, is it because you think women will act inappropriately to protect women? And the answer is both. Right? As in, the logic here is, again, look at the story to both for other stories involving women getting drunk and why that's not good. But the answer is, it's in both directions. Again, if you would say that the doing anything is inappropriate, the same would apply to men, which is why men should certainly not get drunk if they're going to end up doing anything improper. Okay. So far, so good. So many limits that women should not be getting ad lo yada. Drinking wine, yes, but ad lo yada, no. Okay, so next we have, again, Moshe Sternbach. The question is, so about for children, right? Because we say, you know, how, you know, there is chinuch for mitzvot, so you teach, you encourage kids to, you know, do a shachmanot, you know, you pay them a little extra to, you know, to deliver for you. You know, you encourage them to do matot levyonim to make sure to have a kid-friendly Megillah reading so that they can be part of it. But he's supposed to get them used to drinking early, right? So you'd be encouraging, you know, your, you know, 9-10-year-old to drink. So this was asked for Sternbach, and he said, well, first he explained the idea of the Gra, which had the Vilna Gaon, who was his, you know, great-great-great-grandfather, who said that only adults are obligated in Simcha, but children are still required to hear the Megillah, explaining what that meant. So that, when we say the mitzvah chinuch, so that when we say before the age of Bar Mitzvah, that only applies when there is an action. This is such as the mitzvah Kriya Shema, Tfilin, Tzitzit, Shofar, Matzah, etc. In those cases, a father or parent is required to educate his children, but a mitzvah whose foundation is fulfilled through the heart, such as the joy to one's heart by feasting and happiness on Purim, right? Simcha and Mishteh, right? It is not relevant for the mitzvah of chinuch, education before bar mitzvah, because it is impossible for a child in practice to experience the true simcha as commanded, because everything to him is simply laughter and enjoyment, and therefore it is not relevant to educate him in this mitzvah. And our sages do not require educating when he cannot fulfill the mitzvah, and chinuch cannot work for simcha in this case, and this is the correct way to act. So here we have Rav Moshe Sternbach, again, a Rav in Eretz Yisrael, as well as the posek for the Southern Hemisphere, pretty much, right? So then he says, is there a mitzvah for minors under the age of mitzvah to drink? The answer is no. So there's also the question of, let's say, okay, so now that's definitely knocked out a kid below the age of bar mitzvah. What if the kid's 13, 14, right? Boy or girl, should you give them wine or not? So an important thing to take into effect here is the concept of dina d'malchut dina. Are you allowed to do so? Right? If it's illegal, then that's going to be a problem. So part of the question then is so first figure out what the local law is. So for instance, I believe in Canada, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you are permitted to give, you know, sacramental wine to a minor, which would allow them to have a cup of wine. But if you were to get them drunk, then that would be illegal. So hence you could give them a limited amount of alcohol without any legal repercussions, such as, you know, Kiddush Friday night. But if you were to get them drunk, then that would be against the law. So despite the fact that one might think that even if they're certain, again, this is between the ages of, again, depending on the drinking age, whether or not you're in Ontario or in Montreal or in the United States, America, 21, wherever it is you have to bear that in mind, that you are not running afoul of the law. And that is definitely a relevant factor in addition to whether or not they're actively obligated or not in the mitzvah. Okay, so, but there's also a very important question that my wife's asking a question. Should come a little closer to the people in here. Go for it.
No, I was listening to an event by some organization that helps people who deal with different addictions. And one of the psychologists has a place that he deals with kids who have addictions, and the vast majority of them said that their first time having alcohol was within a Jewish framework, for example, on Purim or on a Shabbos table.
Okay.
So there are big dangers.
Okay. So my wife's making coming to a separate point, right? Which we're hopefully going to discuss more on Sunday with our panel on drug abuse. The question of, it's seemingly most people who end up in the Jewish community who wind up being end up abusing alcohol, it always, almost always starts in shul or some other religious framework, right? When it was the first time that the kid started getting drunk, I knew that he liked alcohol. It was when, you know, when his father, grandfather, uncle, mother, whatever, a relative or somebody they knew decided to offer them alcohol when they were underage and they got so excited by the buzz, or when they were overage, and then that's what got them on their journey, unfortunately, in the negative direction towards improper usage of alcohol. So this is something you also, again, we're talking about Gil Chinuch, so this is also the important question of how to properly educate in regards to usage of alcohol. So it's important to note that, again, to be wary of giving alcohol to minors, especially, again, with their developing brains, and to be wary of whether or not it may end up encouraging dependence of the child in question. So that is something that very much needs to be stated and cannot be understated. We'll hopefully again discuss that a little bit more towards the end of this presentation, and that'll be the focus of the panel on Sunday. Again, if anybody has any questions for that, feel free to email them to me, or if you want to be anonymous, there is a form which the link will be at the end of the slideshow. So the next source I would like to focus on is that of, right, Rabbi Elazar Melamed. So we quoted him a little bit before in regards to his recommendation, also in regards to women not drinking, for, again, because of the potential ill effects that can occur. But here I'd like to focus more on his looking into the effects of what the wine can have on you, right? What will be the effect of wine? So again, forgive me for the large amount of text, but I feel that, again, this is a good summary of some sources that we saw earlier that'll also hopefully, you know, moderate once we know, again, we know who's able to drink wine. The question is, well, is it, even if let's say you are of the group that's currently, you know, you're part of a group who is, there's no fear of impropriety happening from your drinking, right? Again, you're of the right age, right? You're of the right health to be doing so. So should you still drink for everybody? So the important thing you have to know is to have to know yourself. So if one, again, so this is from the translation of the Pnei Halacha of Rabbi Elazar Melamed, I'm drinking on Purim. So again, this is his actual translation, or again, the official English translation of Pnei Halacha. So if one knows that drinking a lot of wine caused him to cry and become depressed, right? So the sad drunk, or causes headaches because he's probably allergic to the alcohol, it is preferable for him to fulfill the mitzvah by drinking just a little more than usual, right? So again, if you drink to excess, it causes that of an effect. Again, his general opinion is you should be drinking, ad lo yada, but if you know that's going to happen to you, then you should not, right? If you know the effect of wine on you is not a good effect, you should be staying very far, far away. I'm going to pause here and mention, again, if somebody is a recovering alcoholic, they should stay at, they should never touch alcohol for very good reason. And that is again, outside of the, we're talking about those who are not, in that certain situation. Again, average individual, not somebody who's struggling with alcoholism. So this is because the main objective of the mitzvah is to be happy. And if drinking makes one sad, he undermines the mitzvah. Right. So then again, if somebody's, you know, again, generally eight, you know, drinking the 3 ounces of wine, that is the minimum, that is, you know, like eight, that's like, you know, reviat, most people are not going to be super affected. So that won't happen to. Again, the point is to make one happy. If it makes one sad, then that's the wrong thing to be doing. If, however, he cries out of joy, for example, if he is, you know, a happy crying about important things like the present state of Jewish people, rebuilding of the Holy Temple, or his own independent spiritual state, he may fulfill the mitzvah by drinking ad lo yada. So again, if you are crying, again, about something of import, then that might be considered to be okay. But not if you end up if it ends up causing you to go in the wrong direction of being sad and depressed. Okay, so if one knows that when he gets drunk, he goes wild and hurts others, or he ends up wallowing in his own vomit and degrading himself in public, he should not get drunk. Okay, so this is similar to what we saw earlier by the Chayei Adam, right? That if somebody knows that they are going to be causing any damage then they should not be drinking. There is a discussion of somebody did happen to have been drunk on permit, happened to cause damage, if they're required to pay or not to pay for what damage that they did. But that is assuming that is a after the fact idea, that if you had not known that you were going to, and you happened to by accident when you're drunk, broke something, right? Whether or not you're exempt. But as far as if you know that when you get drunk, you are very likely to start breaking things, you should not be getting drunk, right? Rather, he shall fill a mitzvah by drinking slightly more than usual, which was the minimum that we mentioned before, right? So again, that's like, you know, if you normally don't drink, that means just having a glass, right? And by glass, we mean a minimal one that's, you know, 3 ounces of wine, which is in milliliters, I think somewhere around 70. I could be wrong. Again, the minimum shear for a vias is what you should be drinking. Rather, right? So such a person need not bemoan the fact that he cannot control himself when drunk. So even though the sages state that when wine enters, the secret comes out, and thus his actions while drunk seemingly show that he has a deep-seated inclination toward violence and rowdiness, nevertheless, the sages say, the reward is proportionate to the exertion. Fum sara agra. Right, since he actually manages to curb his impulses in the course of his daily life, it is clear that he continually makes great improvements. And therefore, that individual, what should he not be doing? He should not be drinking if it causes him to go in the wrong direction. Okay, so here we have, again, this is nothing super new, right? Again, this is, the goal of the drinking is drinking of happiness, not drinking of violence, not drinking of violation. And if that happens to be the case, then you should not be drinking. Right? And certainly not getting that drunk. So now, an important note, just in general, which often happens with people who are not used to drinking year-round, is that they're unable to know how alcohol affects them, and they drink irresponsibly. In order to fulfill this properly, one must understand that alcohol reaches the height of its influence around 20 minutes after it's ingested. This delay causes people to make a mistake. When 5 minutes pass after drinking a cup of wine or hard liquor, they do not feel any significant change. They think that they need to drink another cup. And when, even then, they feel that they have not fulfilled the mitzvah, they drink another cup, and to just be sure, one more. Then all of a sudden, the first cup starts taking effect, then the second, and the third, and the fourth. All at once, they become very drunk, behave like animals, begin to vomit, causing much shame and degradation. Therefore, one must know how to drink and rejoice when at least half an hour between drinks, and incorporating one's drinking into the meal. This way, people will be able to rejoice properly throughout Purim. So, right, again, so just to summarize, we've covered a lot here. So, important things to note from Rav Melamed and Pnei Halacha are, you make to be sure that your drinking brings you joy, not sadness. Just make sure that you are, when you're drinking, that you have to know how it will affect you. Do not drink if you know that wine affects you negatively, causing you to violate any sin, cause any damage, or degrade yourself in any way, shape, or form. And last but not least, you have to understand how to responsibly drink alcohol, because if you irresponsibly drink alcohol, you will degrade yourself, the same sequence that is described by Malamed here is also the way that many people end up having to have their stomach pumped every Purim. For more on that, again, you can ask any local EMT or doctor, and they will very much corroborate that being the case every single Purim without fail.
Can I add, don't drive afterwards also?
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Denisov. Do not drive after having imbibed any alcohol. That is against the law, and that's basically murdering somebody. So don't do that. Okay. Right. Unfortunately, most of us are not blessed with the same powers as Rabbah of being able to bring somebody back to life. If you have slaughtered them, please do not slaughter people on Purim. If you have had a drink, make sure that you are not driving, have a designated driver. Yes. So now let's, okay, so before we read here, so first let's do the summary, and then we'll go back and we'll look at the letter by Rabbi Dr. Tversky. That's all. First, let's summarize what we've done till this point. So, who's obligated to drink? So, the answer is for sure, the answer is it would fall to the category of men of a certain age. Definitely not children. Women, it is debatable. Again, some say, again, whether or not they default fall into this category of Tamerly Mudeau at best. And or at, again, even those, many of those who say that for men, there is the case of Lo Yada. Many say that it does not apply. Lo Yada should not be done by women for reasons of likely impropriety, either by them or by those to them. As far as what you should be drinking, the answer is wine. That is the opinion of the Aruch HaShulchan, who is, as well as Rashi and many others, because the miracle happened with wine, specifically wine, not some other spirit. So do not mix your drinks. Focus on wine. When should you be drinking? You should be drinking during Sudat Purim, and the Sudat Purim should be taking place especially this year, when it is quite easy to be done, when we have, turn the clocks. Also, please do so, start your Sudot after Mincha. Again, and you're only drinking during the Sudah itself. So don't go down the Mincha, then your Purim Sudah. Again, there is no mitzvah to drink on Leil Purim, the night of the 14th. There is absolutely no mitzvah whatsoever to be drinking then, as is made clear by the Gemara. There's no mitzvah to get drunk at night at all. And certainly not, I could say many bad stories that I've heard about drink people davening in the morning drunk, etc. But I'm sure people have seen it themselves too. So again, please don't do that. If you know anybody who is, stop them. So where should you be drinking? So the answer is you should be drinking in a safe location. Should not be drinking if you're anywhere near a car, heavy machinery, or could be cause danger to anyone else. Because, well, it's always prohibited to be injuring others or yourself. Don't do that. Okay, why should you be drinking? So as far as the why, we mentioned it's because the miracle of Purim took place by means of wine and mishteh, right? Wines and feasts. So again, make sure you are drinking wine appropriately. As far as how much, we mentioned there's a whole range, right? On the one hand, we have the Gemara, which sounds like Ad Lo Yada, right? So you can live between cursing Haman, blessing Mordechai. Then we have, that's on the one side. On the other hand, we have a little more than one is used to, right? Basically means, for most people who aren't, drinking every single day with every meal, that would mean, a glass of wine. And by that, again, glass of wine means like 3 or so ounces, right? Not, don't try drinking, full, don't try drinking, 300 milliliters or eight ounces of wine. You will be very, you will not handle that well. And remember that you don't need to use 50% alcohol. 4% does the job just fine. Okay. And so that's one option. Another one is that you drink a little bit, a glass of wine, so you're tired and take a nap. This is the practice recommended by the Ramah, as well as the practice of Aaron Lichtenstein, that's all. He used to do that as well, and many others who viewed very strong, I believe also Rabbi Yosef, who viewed very strongly in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and there was no mitzvah of actually getting yourself entirely, removing one's ability to think. Okay. Also, again, you have to make sure that the way you're drinking is in a way that brings joy. If it's not a way that brings joy, you should not be drinking. Be careful that you're not going to lead to any sort of violence to you or to others in any way, shape, or form, or violation of any prohibitions. Included in that is davening while drunk. As we mentioned in our first discussion on drinking, again, if you are too drunk to be stand before a king, you should not be davening Mariv. You should not be benching. You should wait until you are able to, have some degree of level head before performing that action. Because service of God under influence is not service of God. It is simply, if you're sufficiently not there, it is simply an abomination, as the Gemara stated. There, and also most importantly, make sure that you are drinking responsibly and that there will not be any unfortunate repercussions for you or anyone else. Okay, so now let's head on back to a message from Rabbi Avraham J. Twersky, Zatzal. So Rabbi Twersky Zatzal worked with people struggling with addiction of all sorts and has written many books to that effect. I highly recommend, pretty much all of them, Also, again, if you can also find a lot of his lectures online to this effect as well. So here is a letter that he sent out, and letters to this effect pretty much every year. But this is the most recent one that I could find online. So I believe that the reality he speaks to is relevant nowadays as well. So again, this is from 2014, so 8 years ago. So as you know, I have been alerting the community of the increasing problem of alcohol abuse and marijuana smoking among Jewish adolescents. It is unfortunate that many people still do not accept that some of our own children are involved. This is happening to children from the finest families. Given the gravity of the problem and the ineffectiveness of prevention programs, the very least we can do is avoid encouraging intoxication. Purim is soon to be upon us, and many people drink to excess because of the mistaken notion that there is a mitzvah to get drunk on Purim. Rabbi Shneur Zalman in his Shulchan Aruch HaRav, right? That's the Lubavitch Rebbe, the first one, I believe. Right, says that it is impossible to serve Hashem either in levity or drunkenness. So again, despite the fact that nowadays people often head towards Chabad in order to circumvent the law because they are relatively free flowing with alcohol, unfortunately, that is definitely not the opinion in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. One of the final authorities on halacha, the Chafetz Chaim, states clearly that the proper thing to do is not to drink intoxication, but rather must drink a little bit more than they are used to, which would be a glass or two of wine, and then go to sleep. This is the proper way to fulfill, not distinguishing between cursed be Haman and blessed be Mordechai. There's also certainly no justification for drinking anything but wine. The Aruch HaShulchan condemns drinking spirits, liquor, in a very sharp terms. Alcohol intoxication is an abomination, and overriding the rulings of the Baal HaTanya and the Chafetz Chaim by drinking to intoxication is inexcusable. Let us use good judgment on Purim. We should set a model for our children by not drinking to excess and by supervising adolescents so that they do not drink. We can all enjoy a safe, respectable Purim, right? And I invite you to affix your signature below and to distribute this letter throughout the community. Sincerely, Avram J. Twersky. So as is quite clear from this letter from Twersky, again, this is being 8 years ago. There has been a significant uptick since then in terms of both the degree of alcohol being consumed by people by minors as well as marijuana use, especially as marijuana has since been legalized both in Canada as well as in many states of the United States of America. So therefore, it is an ever more present problem than ever before to make sure that people are, when they are becoming intoxicated on Purim, they're doing so in a responsible fashion. So, and again, just if you'd like to review, I'm going to show the summary once again about who should be drinking, how much, right? Again, not everybody's obligated to drink. Even if they are, again, you're supposed to be drinking wine. You should not be trying to replace your wine with edibles. Not a good idea. For more on that, again, we discussed marijuana and why that's not the best of ideas. We discussed the fact that, again, during the Purim Suda itself, not at night, make sure that you're drinking it in a place where you're not going to end up hurting yourself or anybody else. Yes, somebody had a question? Again, the why and the how much and remembering to do so responsibly. Okay, so now before opening the floor to questions, so just want to remind everybody that on Sunday morning at 10 a.m., there's going to be a panel on Zoom on drug abuse, the pandemic, and the Jewish community. I'll be moderating, and we'll be joined by Dr. Michael Kersner, a doctor of addiction medicine, as well as a professor at University of Toronto, Rabbi Grisman of Zichron Yisrael and the Sion Congregation, as well as David Kaufman, director of outreach and education at JAX. So again, if you have any questions about that, I'm going to put the link for the sign up for that in the chat. And if everybody has any other questions, please feel free to ask them now. And I hope to, first I want to thank everybody for coming out tonight and for many other of the evenings. And please let me know if you have any questions related to this or you'd like to see answered hopefully on Sunday as well.
So are you saying the mitzvah cannot be fulfilled with vodka or single malt?
That is the opinion of Rashi, Rabbeinu Chananel, the Aruch HaShulchan, and several other opinions. There are, others who say that you can, but I was taught to, if you have a machloket, you follow the Aruch HaShulchan, especially when the Sara is as very good as it is.
I think the vast majority of people are not getting drunk on wine.
So at least again, I have not, you definitely have more experience than I do, but from my experience, you know, the last 12 years, it's been legal for me to be drinking. People tend to get really, really drunk, and it's even just on wine, they can do really stupid things and get their stomach pumped anyways. So then it's not necessarily the alcohol of choice, because many people prefer, you know, scotch, whiskey, vodka, rum shots, more complicated drinks, etc. But again, because the mitzvah was and the miracle happened with wine, I strongly encourage the wine as opposed to anything else. Also, because when you start mixing drinks, it gets really messy. So that's where I strongly push the Aruch HaShulchan. So anybody else have any other questions in regards to drinking on Purim?